I'd like to tell you my version of the prodigal son. Now, if you're familiar with this story, you know that this patriarch had two sons, and they were very different, these young men. The oldest son did everything his father expected. He lived what most people would consider a good and even morally superior life. But the younger son rejected the life his father offered. In fact, he decided to go out on a journey of self-discovery with his father's money. And he traveled, he drank with prostitutes, and he gambled away his father's fortune until he literally found himself in the mud with nothing but the torn clothes on his back. Now, at that time, he made the decision to return home, make a confession to his father of the things that he had done, ask for forgiveness and a job. Because actually, in those times, if a man left his family like that, the only way he could return was if he would be willing to work to get back into the family. And he was ready to do that. So the boy returns, and when his father sees him, and in my head I have this idea of like the patriarch, the wealthy patriarch's house up on the hill, right? And he can see his son from far off kind of thing. Because the story says that the father ran out to meet his son. And of course, I get this picture of this man in, you know, the flowy robes, picking them up, you know, just so he can run across the field, which is just not very patriarchal, right? But that's still the image that I get in my head. But he runs out to meet his son, and before his son can say a word, he embraces him with a kiss. Before the son even has a chance to confess and to apologize, to essentially make amends, right? His father offers him the robe off his back and says, "Let's have a party. You're home." The father welcomes his son with comfort and celebration, and the son doesn't even apologize. Now, what about the brother, you know, the older one? Well, he's furious, he's jealous. He doesn't understand this journey of self-discovery that his brother has gone on. So he insults his father and calls his judgment into question over welcoming his son back. He even refuses to attend the party. And when his father hears this, no matter how badly that older son now has acted and has treated him, he invites him to the party again. Goes out and welcomes him in again. So see, I don't think that the parable of the prodigal son is about the two sons. I think it's a story about all of us and how easy it is to get lost. We get lost in our point of view. We get lost in our self-will. We get lost in our own way of thinking. See, the emphasis in the story is not on the son, but in the way that their father responds to them. It is an unveiling, I think, of the mercy and the grace of God. The central truth of this parable is the picture of a higher power who wants to care for us, comfort us, and restore us, no matter how lost we've been. The prodigal son rebelled against his father's. His actions revealed that he was even dissatisfied with his father's provision, his father's restrictions, his father's guidance, and so he set out on his own. Now, it was different with the elder son. He actually liked it at home, right? He didn't actually necessarily love and respect his father, but he liked all of the things he had, staying at home and doing things the way his father wanted him to. But like the rest of us, the older brother wanted to have his own way as well. He thought he was smart enough to control his father, to tell him what to do, to call his judgment into question. In that moment, he felt morally superior to his dad. not too unlike his younger brother, who was driven by his own self-will, misguided, distorted thoughts and ways, and even that distorted sense of self. And so I think this parable doesn't just redefine father. You know, a lot of times in the Judeo-Christian tradition, we get this concept of God the Father, and many of us reject that because of the authority and the rule and the control that that might imply. But what about the other side of that relationship? I think this story tells us of a father full of emotion and generosity and a sense of hope for his kids. I think this tells of a father who's willing to forgive even after he's been rejected. It shows us a father who doesn't want his children to suffer. In fact, he wants to comfort them and offer them restoration. Both sons were lost, one full of moral support, superiority, the other lost in self-discovery, but both are examples of self-will run riot and attempts to control their relationships with God, their father, and other people. This parable reminds us that we actually need that initiating love of God and others, because sometimes, even before we can get the words out, we have those people in our lives who still love us, right? And who still come to us. The father didn't wait for the son to ask for forgiveness. And those of you know he was already forgiven. He was already forgiven and he was already loved for exactly who he was at that moment. This parable shows us that amends are not just about our wrongs, right? Any of us who have done a step 5, 6, 7, it's not about our wrongs, it's about the exact nature of our wrongs and what it means to live a life run on self-will. And so this parable explains why we need to be moved by the impact that our decisions and our behavior has on other people. Allow me to take this time to remind you that addiction is a family disease. Whether you're the addict, a friend, or a family member, you probably know what it means to be mad at the people who hurt you. You probably get stuck and frustrated when you feel like life isn't going your way. It's easy to get unhappy in your self-will and your sense of superiority. That's why the uniqueness of the transformation of step 2 is offered to all of us. We can consider that there is a power greater than us, outside of us, that wants to restore us. Because see, every day the world sends messages to our egos that tell us who we should want to be. These messages also dictate what we should want to be and constantly encourages us to fear the things we don't understand, to judge one another, to compare ourselves to each other, even when we come from completely different worlds. See, this message-sending world is a human construct. It is material, and it is subjective. These messages are not spiritual messages of love and tolerance, and it's no wonder we can feel so out of place and awkward and unable to accept the love and forgiveness we get in early recovery. See, our program tells us that a spirit of love and tolerance is our creed, and yet our world tells our egos that an attitude of proud judgment and comparison is the only way. I strongly believe that the message-sending world is selfish and wrong. I believe as we grow in this program, it becomes increasingly difficult to remain unimpressed by material things, and it's even more difficult to believe that we are not who others say we are. But over time, we come to not believe the labels. We come to not believe the names people give us. We come to not even consider that what other people think of us is our business. See, the fact is, no one gets to define us but ourselves. And we are all expressions of the one who created us, whatever you believe that is. The power who created the universe has never known any of us to be less than our spiritual ideal. That means you have always been a spiritual child, and your spirit is wonderfully whole, no matter what you may have done or left undone. As we come to believe in a power greater than ourselves, we learn that nothing is too hard for God. The Great Spirit can move you if you let it. I believe the power of God's grace is limited only by the understanding and the will of each of us. Because see, spirituality is not an all or nothing concept. I think spirituality is actually a choice. To be spiritual people, we have to make spiritual choices. Rigorous honesty is a spiritual choice. Willingness is a spiritual choice. Open-mindedness is a spiritual choice. Working the steps is a spiritual choice also. So I encourage you to be in agreement with the power of the Spirit today and to do your best to ignore anything that tries to sway you away from your primary purpose. Remember that your higher power is waiting for you to return from your journey, whether your journey is run by self-will, moral superiority, something else I cannot say, but the higher power is waiting for you to return, just like the Father in this story. And I guarantee you that your higher power will run and will meet you halfway, will offer to care for you and to restore you to sanity, and it usually happens even before you ask. Will you pray with me? Dear God, as I understand, God, I know that most of us say, I love you. We say it to other people. Some say it to you. But too often we say it automatically. Sometimes we say it deeply and faithfully. But loving faithfully does not mean dividing the spiritual and the physical aspects of ourselves. God, I have learned that loving faithfully is about treating other people as sacred and honoring them in body, mind, and spirit. You have taught me that it means accepting the full people in front of me exactly as they are. Great Spirit, I know of your power, and I love these days when I can feel your presence. Let today be one of those days. Let me walk in your beauty. Allow me and everyone in here to see the sacred in everyone we see. Let us know that we are not alone as we walk around this beautiful gift known as our campus and this stunning offering that is the world. God, I know the journey to wholeness is lifelong. So let us remember to be kind to ourselves and to others along the way. Amen. And so it is.